Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
I'm delighted to say we've got Martin Lipton with us this morning. Martin, we had you on to talk about Spurs. I just wanted to briefly chat to you about what happened with the West Ham scenario. Hopefully it's as bad as it gets, but it could equally be the start of something where we need to get used to high-profile players and managers testing positive from Premier League teams. What is the scenario planning that has happened? What's likely to happen if this was, say, the night before or the day of a Premier League game?
Well, there was an agreement, a rule that was effectively brought in for the restart, that they had to, as long as you had 13 squad players, you basically played the game. I think that number might be a bit more variable, but you have to have a substantial number, half your squad going down for the match to be called off. Now, that's possible, of course, but they are being tested on such a regular basis. And I wouldn't be shocked now, in the light of the West Ham scenario, that that goes back to twice a week. Because it costs the clubs between them £4 million to do the two lots of testing a week. That was the sort of sum that was bandied around over the summer. That they step up the testing to ensure that any outbreaks are contained within the smallest number of people. But it obviously is a concern. West Ham are going to have their game at the weekend. In all probability, I think now, almost certainly without the manager being present, because he has to isolate having tested positive. So I think we've got an issue now that's going to be common over the season at pretty much all clubs. I'd be amazed if there's any clubs that don't have a single outbreak.
And the show must go on, essentially. This is show business. That's what's going to happen, because if the games start getting cancelled thick and fast, then all of a sudden the season leaks again down the far side and the knock-on impact begins to build. So are they committed to just getting this season done and keeping the show on the road as much as possible?
As far as they can, yes. I think the thing that would change that in terms of games being played is if there was a particularly draconian lockdown in one area. Because it's all well and good for getting the players there and in their bubble. But there's all the support staff at the stadium who might not be allowed to leave their homes, potentially. And that would be an issue that might cause games to be postponed. They also have the fallback option, which is written into the Premier League rulebook now, that matches can be played at neutral venues, at the direction and discretion of the board. So whether or not the clubs like it, they can be ordered to play on a neutral territory, neutral grounds, just so the matches do get played.
Okay, that all seems to make sense. And fingers crossed there will continue to be football, and hopefully the numbers start to come down as the new impacts, or the impact of the new lockdown begins to take place. Let's talk a little bit about Spurs. The reaction after the first game of the season was, oh my God, this is a disaster, it's all ruined. And the reaction after the second half, in particular of the Southampton game, is, wow, this is one of the best teams to watch in world football at the moment. So what's the actual truth about where Spurs are, do you think?
I think, as they all say, things are never as good or as bad as you might think, and Spurs are somewhere in the middle. I think looking at them, they're going to have goals in them, particularly when Bale is fit and flying. You can look at that front three and think, oh, they're going to score three goals every game. But they're going to have to, because they're going to concede as many, and therein lies the problem. Defensively, they are still weak. Central defence, they don't look convincing at all. Now, I think they improve immediately once Reguilon is able to play. It also allows them to play with the back three and have the two wing-backs, of Reguilon on the left and Doherty on the right. Now, when Doherty's up and flying, and you know him probably far better than I because of his performances for the Republic, I do think that gives them more threat as well. The extra defender could give them more balance, but they also still desperately need a second striker. Not to start, but to allow Kane not to play every game, because if Harry Kane has to play every game, he will get injured, because players get injured, and it's been proven with him over the last few years. If he overplays, he is prone to injury. They are still a little bit one pace. I think it's fair to the same midfield. The interesting thing for all Spurs fans will be what happens with Ndombele. Was that pirouette to create the goal a flash in the pan or a sign of things to come? Joy very much still out. I think Lo Celso, when he came on Sunday, gave them a bit more in terms of direct passing. But for what was expected of him when he arrived last season, he hasn't lived up to that. Are Spurs going to win the league? No. Are they going to contend for the top four? Well, they'd have a chance, but they've still got to improve markedly. But then you look at some of the others, and United looked, any frustrations I had about Spurs' performance were rather put into better context by seeing the way United played, and indeed the way Chelsea have played in their first two games, despite winning the first one of them. They're all much of a matchness, aren't they?
It does seem that they're all going to come together at some point, Martin, and that the frailties will be exposed at varying times. The question is, I guess, how do you stop those frailties appearing as often as they do with Tottenham Hotspur? And quite often it can be a question of the back line as well. How do you think that they are fixed at centre-back with Eric Dier in this position that he has professed to love so much now this season?
I do think there's a real chance he ends up playing as part of a back three. Where he arguably had his best football under Pochettino when he dropped into the three alongside, then it was Alderweireld and Vertonghen when Spurs were in possession, but it was a different shape went out, you know. And it's that sort of thing where he perhaps works better there, and he's bright enough to do that. But they do need a defensive leader. Clearly, he's not going to play Alderweireld every game. He's missed the last two, having started the first one. I think he still has doubts over Sanchez. We know that indeed from the documentary, when he had to dig at him out of his performance in the Europa League final all those years ago for Ajax. They are looking at central defenders. There's the Korean lad who plays in China is one. They've also looked at Srinyar. They've looked at a few. I think they need to get one in urgently, a physical line leader, which of course is what all Mourinho teams have had. He likes experience and solidity at the back. And he likes pace up front. That's a Mourinho side. He likes to play off a nine. But without the defensive discipline and aggression and shape, they're going to be exposed. All of last season, they were horribly exposed defensively. And they've also conceded far too many goals from set pieces. And again, this season, they've conceded two goals from set pieces and threats from others. They've got to sort that out.
A back three is very interesting, Martin, because that not only gets the best out of Reguilón and Matt Doherty, it gets the best out of Gareth Bale potentially as well.
Well, he certainly should do that. The problem is you probably play then as a sort of a 3-1-2 or 3-4-2-1 with Bale, Son slightly behind Kane, but with the ability to run in behind. Now, that works as well, I suspect. It all depends what Gareth Bale we're seeing. If we're seeing a fit Gareth Bale, with him on the right, I presume, Son on the left and Kane between them, with the chance to run from deep, they are going to cause problems for any team in the country, aren't they? Because the three of them are incredibly talented players. If you've got a slightly injured, lower rev Gareth Bale, then any initial feelings of all there while it will soon be changed, because people will look at him and they'll see what there is there. In the way that every player who comes into the Premier League can start well, sustaining that is very difficult because teams work them out. Watching Saturday in United, all the rave reviews of Bruno Fernandes got, he looked a very different player on Saturday, didn't he? It looked as if players and Palace had thought about how they were going to play against him. So it's the same for everyone. The really great players are the ones who keep on reinventing themselves on a sort of bi-weekly basis to score and to perform. Kane has done that over a long period. Son has for Spurs. Salah, a prime example as well for Liverpool. Likewise, Aguero at City. Doing it week after week, month after month, season after season.
What does the actual signing of Bale say about where Spurs are at the moment? It's hard for me to think that if Pochettino had been making the case, oh, I really want Gareth Bale, whether or not it would have happened. It seems like there's some kind of symbiosis between Mourinho and the chairman now, that I don't know if it's a new thing. I don't know if it's like finally Daniel Levy's got his man in Jose Mourinho and he's going to back him. Am I reading too much into this?
Well, you have to look at the signings that were made by Pochettino and suspect that some of them he's made because he doesn't want to sign star players. He wants to create stars rather than sign them. Because Spurs had money. He never really went out and got, and never pushed for a big name player. It was always, you know, I'm going to skip the ones I don't like and improve the team by bringing somebody else in. No, maybe it's different, but it never felt that way. Mourinho, you know, is going to push. And it's the first time in a while that Levy's had a manager who's pushing for players at a time when Spurs are, you know, amongst the big 10 in Europe financially. They weren't before. So Spurs, despite all the issues that COVID is causing, Spurs are financially far stronger. And now you've got a manager pushing the chairman to utilise that fact. So it is a difference. It's clearly a change in approach and stance. And it's led by the manager. But the chairman's got to go along with it. And Daniel Levy is clearly bought into Bale being the missing piece, almost in the jigsaw. Whether that's true or not, we will see.
If he's fit, and I know it's a huge if, but if he's fit, that front trio is one of the most exciting front trios in world football.
You would think so, yeah. I mean, they'll score goals, lots of them. It does sort of take me back to Ardiles and his famous five to a degree. Which was unfortunate because it ignored the hole in the middle. And that is perhaps the danger. You wouldn't have thought that Mourinho would fall victim to that approach. And indeed, it's going to be three and maybe a fourth joining in the reverse player defenders. So we'll end up with some version of 6-0-4, I guess. So it's a bit more solid. But he would basically say to those front three, go on then, we'll give you the ball and we'll all stand and watch because you're brilliant. And there's a chance that they can cause real damage to a lot of teams.
What was the famous five again? That was Sheringham, Klinsmann,
Barnby, Dumitrescu, Klinsmann, and Anderson.
Oh yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember who the centre backs were.
I hear and everything.
That was as much down to the kind of crazy approach by that five and their attacking philosophy. Like, this is one of the potential frustrations that might exist over the next little while, is that the pieces might all be there. The questions are whether or not Jose Mourinho actually wants to utilise them in an offensive manner, in a manner that might actually get the best from them.
Well, it's on him. I mean, if he doesn't work at Spurs, he doesn't get, I don't think, another big job anywhere. He knows that. So there's if he wants to be Portugal manager, he can do it tomorrow. But I think in his mind, he's still got one more big job after Spurs. He won't get that if he doesn't do well at Spurs. So it's incumbent upon him to sort it out and get it right. And that means making big decisions. And I think there has to be some departures as a consequence of that. And we're probably going to go into them fairly soon. But he is now getting the chance in this window, which I don't think people expected, to remake the squad in his own image. Let's see what that image is.
Dele Alli obviously is one of those that is linked with a move in most of the papers today to PSG on loan. We were chatting about this before we came on. How calculated was the whole documentary and the scenes where, as far as I know, the club have some element of editorial control over it? So obviously, somebody at Spurs thought, do you want this to go out? And Mourinho was like, yes, I do.
Yeah, I think it clearly wants to send out some messages and explanations. Everyone at Spurs is still telling me that they do not want to lose Dele Alli. However, I think it's fair to say that perhaps Dele Alli might fancy a short-term, if not long-term, move from Spurs at the moment. Therein lies a different scenario which the club has to attend to and deal with. I think that there are people who are disappointed with Ali's development, or more pertinently, his lack of development, which I think is a bit unfair. I mean, his absolute prime a couple of years ago, he was playing as a second striker and he's had a completely different role for 4 years. That's tough, you know, and he's, I think, at times struggling to find his role in any team, which includes why he's not getting a game for England for over a year. There's talent there is unquestioned. Look at those statistics. They bear that out. Look at some of the goals he scored. But he does appear to have stood still for, if not gone backwards, for a fair old while.
Where is his best position?
I think it's very close to the striker. In the hole behind, perhaps, or running on behind, running on from behind and past, because he doesn't have to be worried about dropping deeper and being technical and part. You know, he needs to be free to just go and cause damage. That, I think, is where his best place is.
So like a 9.5 or a...
That's the thing. Yeah, I think that's about right.
Between a 9 and a 10, not quite a 10, not somebody who's coming deep and getting on the ball, but somebody who's...
definitely not a 9, but he's, you know, the old, he'd have been fine in an old-fashioned 4-4-2, you think, as a second striker.
Yeah, and there's a bang of David Platt a bit off the goals that he scores, arriving kind of unseen, but you don't have a midfield constellation that allows that anymore. In terms of the Matt Doherty role, we were very interested to see that he was one of the ones immediately name-checked by Mourinho as not being fit enough after the first game. It was like, well, you don't really want to get on Mourinho's bad side, because he can just decide that you're going to be one of his projects for the year, and he talks about you incessantly. And, you know, we saw what Luke Shaw, the man-marking job that he would do from the touchline on where Shaw's position was at every moment of the game. And that type of micromanagement, not great for your career, not great for your self-confidence. What do you expect the role that Doherty will fulfil? If they do go to three at the back, it's fairly obvious. But if it stays a four-back, flat-back four, what kind of responsibilities will he have to be an attacking player?
Well, very much so, though. It's slightly, because, you know, often with Mourinho, you get one fullback who goes out and the other sits. Last season at Spurs, all the attack came down from the fullback, came from Aurier. He's not very good. Doherty's a far better player. So if Davis is in the team, for whatever reason, at left back, the onus is on Doherty to be the attacking weak fullback, because the other one won't. With Reguilon on the other side, it's a bit more of a balanced team, you feel. So they can both at times go forward. But obviously, when one goes forward, the other one has got to be willing to get back. I think what he would have liked on Sunday was the way Doherty got up in support in the first 5 minutes for the goal that was disallowed for Kane, because the ball's played left. You don't expect the right back to be on the end of the cross heading the ball back into goal. Now, Mourinho would have been very impressed with that, I'm sure, because that's exactly the energy he's looking for. But he's under pressure to deliver and be a significant upgrade on what they had. But they think they bought that. They think he is that. And they think he'll just, you know, get into some sort of proper physical shape. Most players aren't in shape at the moment. They're all over the place. We know that. They've had a mess of a summer. The season was chaotic at the end of last year. So it's not surprising that he, among others, was named it. I thought he was poor against Everton. I didn't think he was great against Plovdiv last week, but I thought he was significantly better on Sunday, and hopefully that improvement will continue for him. I'm sure it's in there. You know it's there. But Mourinho expects a lot of him, unquestionably.
As long as he gets his pressing game out of him, like that was one of the questions that he had after the Everton defeat. Was there an improvement on that front? Like, I think the Southampton game was just such an anomaly in how Hasenhüttl approached the game that it was hard to even get a sense of how Spurs were without the ball in the second half.
Yeah, they didn't. It was such a bonkers game. I don't think you can judge anything on it other than the fact that, you know, they're going to score goals. I think a real test, the more accurate, relevant one will be Sunday, because we know exactly how Newcastle will play, which will be they'll sit extremely deep, look to counter. So can Spurs press from the front, force the errors in the way they didn't? The corresponding game last season summed up the Pochettino demise. They played Newcastle in their fourth game at home on a Sunday, had all the ball, never looked like scoring, and lost 1-0. A performance like that, and the question marks will arise again. A performance full of VO and conviction and push and press and then goals. And people think, okay, the Everton was a misstep, but they've got back on balance now.
Can I ask you, Martin, do you feel that the Amazon documentary has been a positive or a negative for Tottenham Hotspur?
If it ends up with Amazon sponsoring the stadium for £25 million a week, it's been a massive positive. I think it's widened the audience of the club globally, and that's what they need at the moment. I think if you look at it, it wasn't the hagiography that the City one was. I thought it was quite interesting. It wasn't as much fun as as the Sunderland one was, because that was just a total car crash, wasn't it? That was brilliant fun to watch if you're not a Sunderland fan. But I think Spurs fans would have enjoyed it. Rival fans would have enjoyed taking the mickey out of it. I don't think anyone gets hurt by it, apart from the fact that, you know, the doctors are terrified of Mourinho and that he is unbelievably religious, which I didn't... I thought I knew it in the back of my mind, but didn't realise it before. I do think that some of the stick that Kane has got for his team choice is a bit unfair, because I also watched the Michael Jordan thing, and all he ever said was, "What time is it? Game time." And he's some marvellous leader. And Kane gets stick for swearing a couple of times. Come on.
Team talks are never good. They're never good in retrospect in the cold light of day. Unless you're actually in the room and you're the subject of that team talk, they're always cheesy and weird and, like, you know, there's always a bang of David Brent off them.
Just, oh, yeah. You know what they also are? Utterly irrelevant.
That's the other thing.
Utterly meaningless. The only thing that matters is getting the tactics right and playing well.
Yeah, if you play well and the team has a plan, more often than not, you're going to win. Certainly, if you've got better players.
Good player syndrome. Yes. Shocking.
It's true. And it's the whole way through history as well. The good players, even the great Barcelona team and the great Spain team, they all had amazing players. So the coaching, let's wait and see how those coaches all end up doing afterwards. Last question for you, right? The Mourinho thing, everybody always has the Mourinho clock. And we can see over the last number of clubs that the clock has been fairly consistent about how long it is before he burns out. Everything accelerated over the last couple of jobs. And there was a sense, maybe, until Bale arrived, I wasn't, and with the documentary, I wasn't quite sure what the clock was here. But it feels like he might have found a kindred spirit. Is there a sense, you think, that we are, like, he has plenty of time at the moment? Or does success need to come this year?
There's an expectation of success. They want silverware. They want to be better. And he will be judged on that. The thing that struck me all the way through this last, with nearly a year now, 10 months, is that he's behaved far better than I expected him to. I thought he'd have been throwing toys out of the pram very early, because that's what he tended to do. And each stage of his career, his patience, tolerance threshold seemed to diminish. But he's been extremely well behaved. He hasn't caused ructions really at Spurs in a way that I think he realises this is his last chance at a big club as well. He's got to do well. But he knows that Levy will give him the opportunity. I saw the bookies yesterday, had him as 6-1 third favourite. That's only because they're looking for mug punters. Because there's no way that Mourinho is going to be the first manager to leave his job this season. It's just not going to happen. He's going to get the season. Unless there's a spectacular implosion on the pitch, which of course might happen, as we saw at Chelsea the season after he won the title. But the mood at Tottenham seems to have changed. The signing of Bale has given real bounce to everyone, the fans in particular, but I think in the dressing room as well. You know, who wouldn't want to play with a player of that quality? The signing of the left back shows that there's a plan. So two fullbacks have changed. That's the difference from the squad. So he's mixed up the dressing room. So I think you never know with Mourinho, but I think he's in a good place.
It's going to be always fascinating to watch. Great to talk with you, Martin. Thanks a million for joining us.
Sure. Thank you.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.